This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from, in other words, Women's Books and Resources, your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center offering community space, events, gifts, tools for the revolution, a comprehensive collection of women's writings, and more located at 3734 Southeast Hawthorne and on the web at www.inotherwords.org. And this is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. I don't know when I've done a year-in-review show. In fact, I think I never have. I never liked them much since, as a news junkie, you know, it gets to be a year and everyone's doing it. It's everyone's doing a year-in-review show. And as a news junkie, I'd be thinking, yeah, it happened and it was commented on. So what's new? You know, because I'd be keeping track of the ones of the stories that interested me. Take 1989, for example, when Bush the Greater decided to give Panama a special early American-style Christmas present by genociding the inhabitants of El Chorrillo and burning their bodies with flamethrowers, tossing them in the Jardín de la Paz in little burned-up chunks. No time to review the year then, because that was the story, but this year has truly been a cowbird in the sparrow's nest, ye gods, so I'll review a bit, but then it's back to what's coming up. However, I am not going to go in chronological order. Well, what about 911? More evidence of Bush and Cheney collaboration has come up, hasn't it? The stand down has become more obvious. The detonation of the towers, especially World Trade Center 7, has become more obvious. And you probably heard more about that on Andrew Geller's show, if you've been listening to KBOO. Able Danger is still being kept under the rug. What's Able Danger? That's that Army unit that identified the hijacker attackers. The ones that were real, anyway. Exactly 1 year before 911, a highly classified U.S. Army intelligence unit known as Able Danger had already pinpointed four of the 911 hijackers, Mohammed Atta, Marwan al-Shehi, Khalid al-Dimar, al-Midar, sorry about that, Khalid, and Nawaf al-Hamzi, were identified as members of a Brooklyn al-Qaeda cell on a detailed chart that included visa photographs. The Army unit was established by the Special Operations Command in 99 by General Hugh Shelton, then chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Didn't hear much about that this year, did we? What about torture? Wow, what a great year for torture. 1995, Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, more revelations from Cy Hirsch, the rape. I mean, how bad can it possibly get? And then it turns out that, these bad apples in Abu Ghraib turn out to act in the same way as the bad apples in Guantanamo, who turn out to act the same way probably as the secret European prisons people. And then there's the Navy ships that have prisoners on them that we don't know about because they won't tell us because it's a secret, because all they have to say is national security and we all turn into zombies. And then Condi Rice is sent to Europe to say, let's see now, what did she say? Basically, we didn't torture. This doesn't qualify as torture. You guys are complicit in the torture. No torture happened, and we're going to keep torturing. And that went over real well. And then there was the worst hurricane season ever. I have some more details on that coming up. Katrina. The old barge through the levee. How much coverage have you heard about the giant barge that just happened to break loose from its moorings when there was no wind blowing and smashed through a levee? How about those suburban white cops blocking the highway so people couldn't get to food and water? Oh, they just happened to be black people. How about the 500 kids still missing? Where are they? How about the victim pay that's now being denied so that Katrina victims can now be homeless? What about the land grab of the homes that are now being bought up at low rates so they could be turned into who knows whatever turns out to be profitable? Casinos, I guess. What about the denial of return rights to all apartment residents? What about the racism? I mean, if that hurricane brought out racism, more than anything has in a long time, I think. And then there was Kenyan International hired to dispose of the bodies. So we don't know how many people are still, we don't know how many people have died or where their bodies are. How many bodies? Because Kenyan International is known for their corruption and their abuse of bodies. Then there was corruption in Washington. Abramoff. Just the word Abramoff is going to mean something for a while. and his dealings with a certain Tom DeLay, who's already in trouble for money laundering. But, you know, Abramoff and DeLay went once to Saipan, land of prostitutes. And then later it turned out that Mr. DeLay got some legislation passed favorable to Saipan as a land of convenient prostitution. Kind of brings up the old subtext of sexism, doesn't it? And there's 12 other Republicans and more associated with Abramoff, who has now turned state's witness. He's the snitch now. He's the canary. And then there was Rove. What can I say about Karl Rove? Well, Rove, Libby, Judith Miller, Valerie Plame. That whole thing's not over by a long shot. And then, of course, Cheney is still getting his money from Halliburton. There are many stories that just didn't pop up that much on the news, and yet they were cooking. William Greider writes in dollarsandcents.org, Alan Greenspan popped the late 1990s stock market bubble and threw the economy into recession. Will the new Fed chief do the same thing with the housing bubble? He says, if Ben Bernanke is unlucky, he may inherit the whirlwind when he succeeds Alan Greenspan as Federal Reserve Chairman early next year. The Greenspan Fed is once again pursuing a high-risk strategy while concealing its real intentions from the public, raising short-term interest rates in the name of fighting inflation, but actually aiming to defuse the price bubble in housing. The last time the Fed tried this maneuver, it was hoping to subdue the stock market bubble. That gambit ended badly. Shareholders lost $6 trillion, and instead of subsiding gently, the bubble collapsed and the economy went into recession. This time, as sophisticated financial market analysts understand, the Fed's true objective is asset deflation, though neither Greenspan nor Bernanke will acknowledge even that a housing bubble exists. Raising short-term rates, the Fed assumes, will induce financial markets to raise rates on long-term loans like mortgages, and higher interest on mortgages would definitely dampen housing prices. Trouble is, the Fed strategy has so far failed utterly. Long-term rates are not rising. If Bernanke persists with Greenspan's strategy, short-term rates may rise higher than long-term rates. That unnatural condition means the imminent threat of recession, which is what has occurred repeatedly when the Fed has induced the state of inverted short-term and long-term rates. A recession, as always, imposes the worst pain and loss on the weakest parties, the newly unemployed, families already struggling with debt, and small businesses already squeezed by energy costs and other negatives. Thorsten Veblen called it the slaughter of the innocents. It's simply wrong for the Fed to put the real Main Street economy at risk in order to solve a financial problem, the housing bubble that Greenspan, Bernanke, and their colleagues at the Fed won't even acknowledge exists, let alone admit their culpability in creating. And get that at dollarsandcents.org. You can also, if you hear something that you want more details on, you can go to the blog, and that's PressWatch, PressWatch, at blogspot.com. PressWatch at blogspot.com, and you will find this part of the script. And but the funny thing is, I didn't know when I'm just so computer ignorant. I posted this at the last minute and discovered that everything that was underlined came out as fill in the blank. In other words, the underline comes out and the words don't. So it's kind of it's almost like a sort of crossword puzzle sort of thing. You know, you get to figure out what the heck I was talking about wherever something was underlined. Stories that just didn't get talked about. Well, you know, it didn't get talked about in the right way, I think. There was an Ontario paper talking about the climate, and a quote from that paper, just a little quote, so I won't tell you which paper. In the fury of the late summer tornado, a ballpoint pen was driven 7 centimeters into a tree in southern Ontario, Canada. What's wrong with this picture? Southern Ontario, Canada? You know, we've had the record hurricane season, the highest hurricane wind speeds ever, and a ballpoint pen splits a tree in Ontario? I mean, that's supposed to be too far north for tornadoes, generally speaking. 7 centimeters, let's see, that's about, what, 2 1/3 inches? About the size of George Bush's penis, I think. Penn State meteorologist on weathertrends.blogspot.com. Hey, what do you know? He's on the same blog spot. Says some scientists predict that the intensity of hurricanes and their maximum wind speeds may be increasing, and that Category 4 and 5 storms will become more common in years to come. Ocean and atmospheric temperatures work together to determine the maximum wind speed available. based on ocean and atmospheric conditions on Earth. Nowadays, the estimated maximum potential for hurricanes is about 190 miles per hour. This upper limit is not absolute, however. It can change as a result in changes in climate, and scientists predict that as global warming continues, the maximum potential hurricane intensity will go up. They disagree, however, on what the increase will be. Scientists have predicted that wind speeds, including maximum wind speeds, should increase about 5% for every 1 degree Celsius increase in tropical ocean temperatures. Chris Landse, who wins the prize for the name of a meteorologist, L-E-N-D-S-E-A, that's not what's written, but I'm just improvising here. Anyway, a meteorologist at the National Hurricane Center disagrees. Landse believes that even in the worst-case global warming scenarios, where global temperatures ratchet up by an additional 1 to 6 degrees Celsius, there would be about a 5% change total by the end of the 21st century. That means that hurricane force winds are unlikely to exceed 200 miles per hour, Landse said. The fastest regular wind that's widely agreed on was 231 miles per hour, 1934, Mount Washington, New Hampshire. During a May 1999 tornado in Oklahoma, researchers clocked the wind at 318 miles per hour. So we have to ask, is there time for a new scale? Should we have a Category 6 hurricane? I'm joined now by Chris Sondre.
Good morning.
Hi.
We have more of this stuff. It just goes on and on.
It's been a hell of a year. It's been such a year that I'm doing a year in review show.
It's that bad. Finally. Events in the world have pushed Teresa to the very limits, and we're actually doing year-end wrap-up type shows. Again, if we're taking calls...
Yeah,
we're taking calls.
I mean, if the phone system will work, it seems to have gremlins. We just had the engineer come in here and say that she pushed a button and it popped up into the air and fell on the ground.
That's what we're up against, people. That's what we're up against. There's an interesting story again. This is from the UK Observer. Title is Guinea Pig Kids, How New York City is Using Children to Test Experimental AIDS Drugs. That should be alarming. Orphans as young as 3 months old were used as test subjects in AIDS drug trials in New York's Incarnation Children's Center. The center is run by Catholic Charities, specializes in treating HIV sufferers, and the drug trials were performed on children suffering with HIV or who were born to HIV-positive mothers. New York City Health Department is looking into claims that more than 100 children at its incarnation were used. I read it as incarceration. Close but no cigar. In as many as 36 experiments. This is very, very upsetting. There is evidence coming out of some sub-Saharan African countries that HIV drugs have been tested on the populace there as well. And there have been sporadic bursts of information from mainstream media, but for the most part, I believe that's been well and truly suppressed. We have calls?
You know, it's funny how many governments think of their populations as livestock, and I think that ours is one of those. And you mentioned drugs, and I have a personal story. I subscribe to a service called DES Sons, which became DES Trans. DES stands for diethylstilbestrol, and it's the reason I call myself Teresa, and you're hearing a male voice. It turns out that I am both male and female physically, and I'm not the only one. I don't know how many of us there are, but it turned out this year that, yes, it did break chromosomes, and yes, these changes are passed on and will be passed on for generations. So my personal story is that freaks like me are going to appear for we don't know how many generations because the chromosomes are being passed on in that form. And we have a caller, I believe. The number to call if you would like to call into KBOO is 503-231-8187. Is that the case, engineer? We still have a caller? Let's see if the phone magic is working.
Can I make a comment there? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning.
Hey, here's an unreported story in the Northwest. Karen Dorn Steele, Spokane Spokesman Review, she keeps covering the Hanford beat. 2,300 legal claims against Hanford waiting to go to court or be resolved about cancers and sicknesses. 5 people were to court in May.
Well,
some people won. Ongoing litigation considering the radiation threat.
I'm glad to hear that people are going en masse against the government because that's the only way they're going to get satisfaction. You know, when you get a tumor from radiation or from anything, it doesn't pop up with a little label that says, you know, chlorine-based compound or, you know, you're...
No, cancer isn't the only cancer is not the only disease you get from radiation. It's premature aging of cells, you know, diabetes, metabolic diseases, neuromuscular disease, clusters of, you know, MS, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy type, brain tumors, astrocytomas, glioblastomas along the Columbia River, around Pendleton, Hood River, Umatilla. Those areas, the native people are indicator species since they live totally in the environment and they have lots of kidney disease. Living along the Columbia River, they didn't go to Safeway for their vegetables and totally, you know, eating a pound of salmon a day coming out of the river. So, yeah, and you have to understand that the nuclear weapons production is illegal, too. So these are human rights violations while they're committing illegal nuclear weapons and stuff. So she stays on the beat, and so her articles should be, you know, and you may have a family member that has a question about their health.
What's her name again?
Well, Karen Dorn Steele's a reporter, and it's the Spokane Spokesman Review. The case I mentioned, it took place in May. You know, they reported on it, but they also reported on the 2,300 claims. But there's the ongoing thing about people filling out questionnaires about their health. So you may have a family member, you may have grown up, because these radiation releases happen for like over 50 years. People scattered around the country, but they have health problems. And, you know, they may want to fill out a questionnaire and send it in and try to see their doctor and start finding out about their history and stuff. And their
those
kids,
tanks are still there, so this isn't over.
Genetic problems, DNA, so these are successive generations, too. Good show. Have a nice year.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Coming up at 10 o'clock on KBOO, Will Siemens' series of interviews on the Middle East continues. Today he speaks with Dr. Tanya Reinhart on the topic, Why We Left Gaza. That's at 10, the next show, on KBOO Portland.
It's interesting, too, how many of these stories, when you look back over the events of the last year, when one makes a serious effort to bring them to people's attention, one's very often accused of, you know, conspiracy theories. A lot of people felt that tsunami could have the devastation could have been lessened if somebody had picked up a cell phone, and that it was more or less allowed to happen, much the same way that Katrina was allowed to happen. This is something that's absolutely taboo to mention in the mainstream media, because you're immediately told you know, conspiracy theory. But I call again the listeners' attention to how many of these stories that had been classed all as conspiracy theories have revealed themselves to be true. Government spying, all this sort of thing. What's coming out this year, I think, is predictive of what we can expect in 2006. Therefore, I think it is even more important for the last caller, for example, to keep at it and not allow your spirit to fail. It's more important now than ever to keep on talking about these issues.
You know, we've really got some momentum now, and the right wing is fighting back really, really hard because they realize, I think, that they cannot continue in any legitimate forum. They must maintain power now by intimidation, because they've not only crossed the Rubicon River, they've burned all the bridges. They can't go back now. They can't go back to legitimacy from, well, Bush's decision to spy on anybody whenever he feels like it, Bush's decision to go to war on the basis of a lie and to continue lying about it. And the question I have is, what are these monsters up to next? If you go to presswatch.blogspot.com, you'll find five links that were sent to me by Andrew Geller about possibility of war with Iran and Syria. And I wanted to pass on a sixth one, this from Al Jazeera. This is fairly brief. In October, a Russian rocket carried Iran's first spy satellite. Yep, I said Iran's first spy satellite, the Sana-1, into orbit. This launch accelerated Israel's plans to strike Tehran's nuclear facilities. The Jewish state is now getting ready for an attack by the end of March. While Iran's nuclear program is Israel's main concern, its space capabilities are also considered a point of no return, which determines the actual timing of the Israeli strike. The Iranian space program is a matter of deep concern to us, said an Israeli defense official. If and when we launch an attack on several Iranian targets, the last thing we need is an Iranian early warning received by satellite. Iran wants to master space technology as soon as possible amid fears the West will seek to impose restrictions on its satellite program like those placed on its nuclear plans. According to an article in globalresearch.ca, the Sina-1 is just the first of several Iranian satellites set for Russian launches in the coming months. The Islamic Republic is also working on a Shahab-4 missile that could carry an Iranian-built satellite into orbit. And there's more to that article, but you know, the context is Ahmadinejad has been shooting off his mouth like the Iranian Bill O'Reilly. He's just an idiot, obviously, and he's being used as an excuse to make the entire nation suffer the horror of an Israeli-U.S. Bombing campaign.
For all we know, he's been planted there much the same way that Saddam Hussein was. You know, on the subject of Iran, there was a story this week. Watergas apparently went to Ankara, Turkey, which is, we have air bases in Turkey, just to let the Turkish government know that the U.S. was, in fact, not going to do it, but of course just sort of vaguely thinking about an air war against Iran and Syria. So a lot of these things, you hear them and you think, nah, couldn't be. And then, bang, you find out, yep, there it is.
But if you look at the way these people act, then it is entirely credible. And, you know, given the variety of sources, you really have to ask. I mean, I really don't think the Bush administration gives a damn whether the American public wants another war or not. I mean, that's obvious enough from their previous behavior. I also wanted to comment that there's a similarity here that most people don't know or don't remember, that just before the 1991 attack on Iraq, they launched a satellite into orbit.
Yeah, I think that Iraq posed a threat because it was secular, it was progressive, and it had technology that it was on the verge of deploying. It's simply not to the advantage of, you know, the Paris Club, the group, you know, the financiers around the world, for countries in the Middle East to have stable governments. So something had to be done about that, and by gosh, it sure was. What I wanted to, Teresa, what do you think of the question that's been on my mind, is the administration, the powers that be, now that they are somewhat cornered and a bit painted into a box, does that not make them more dangerous and possibly more, angrier, more violent? I mean,
I think so, but it also calls for immediate direct action. I mean, I think the next, you know, million-person march on Washington should just go right into the White House. We don't have the choice of allowing these people to rule any longer. They have to go down on the crimes that they have committed, and we have to get people determined to act in concert together. And not just war protests, we're going to have to go a lot further.
Just
we have
north
to hold
of Burnside by our, the elephant statue.
All the legislators that we can get in coalition together. There has to be
Friends
an impeachment. Ralph Nader's calling for
this
an impeachment.
Is the Kibu community count.
And that's just the start. And we have to get these people in jail, and they know it. And they're going to set
Israel,
up something
Palestine,
so that we can't. So this is the time to act.
It's a matter of responsibility.
At 10:30,
I think it's moral
Mali,
responsibility,
Ohio.
Personal
yes, so
responsibility, political
and
responsibility.
It's Democracy Now with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez.
In towards that, it's very
Israel,
important
Palestine,
to have
how
a sense
to
of community and at 10:30,
the Mali Ohio
for one another.
Yes, hosts,
that will make a lot of
11,
the tasks ahead of us in
now
the coming years
Amy Goodman and
much,
Juan Gonzalez.
Well, safer. And
thank
easier,
you very much.
Maybe even
it's
more
Tanya
fun.
Tanya Reinhardt, professor
but
at Tel Aviv University and the University of Utrecht.
Teresa was talking
she
about
is the author of
some
Israel,
stories on
how
climate
to
change
end
and weather
and
the equality
war.
Previous
and at
program that
Mali
also brought up some important points.
And
regarding the tsunami
business,
I have here a story from Interpress Service from January of last year. And it says, in part, the tragic and devastating power of 2004's post-holiday tsunami was plastered across the cover of practically every newspaper around the world for the better part of a month. At the same time, the U.S. aid was widely publicized domestically. Our coinciding military motives were virtually ignored by the press. While supplying our aid, which, when compared proportionally to that of other less wealthy countries, was an insulting pittance, we simultaneously bolstered military alliances with regional powers and began expanding bases throughout the Indian Ocean. I'd be very curious to hear more about that. Any listeners know about the expansion of military bases throughout the Indian Ocean region?
Well, you can certainly see the parallel with Katrina. The the levee situation certainly looks like a setup from this perspective, doesn't it? And now what's happening? The whole area is occupied by military, police, and worse, by corporate thugs, mercenaries, armed with machine guns. And what's happening is a land grab, and it's the same thing happening in Indonesia.
Yeah, there was something a bit on Democracy Now! Yesterday, I believe, the fact that there's going to be this buffer zone. Every time I hear the word buffer zone, I worry. We've got buffer zones going all over the place now, and I'm just wondering what they're designed to keep out and who they're designed to keep in. In tsunami-affected areas in Sri Lanka, they want to keep people back. The local indigenous people, fishermen and so forth, that have always lived on those shores. They want to keep them back from shore, so they have no way of making a living. The shores instead will be developed by resort companies and so forth, because presumably they're going to build a structure that is not going to get swept away. Well, I think we have bad news for them. As Teresa said, there's going to be some very big storms coming.
Oh, yes, I don't see why not. I mean, the heat engine is just going to continue. I wanted to say that one thing that I've noticed over the last year is the ferocity and the irresponsibility of the elite, and their determination for absolute hegemonic hierarchy has been exposed over the past year. And we see this in Bush and Cheney, but we also see it in the corporations, the grabs against pensions, the constant strikes against the working class, the ridiculous anti-bankruptcy bill that allows corporations to continue with their generous bankruptcies whenever they feel like it, and puts credit card debt on a priority over child support payments. That is monstrous, and it's just going to become more obvious as it goes into effect. People don't want to pay attention to the news to that degree of detail, but they're going to be feeling it. Everyone's going to be feeling this monstrous bankruptcy bill.
Well, when things go wrong, it's good for business. Disease is very good for business. There's not going to be any kind of serious effort to cure AIDS or cancer, some of these things, because, after all, they're very good for business. The people that can afford to pay for the medicines and treatments and so forth, those people have money, they will survive. People can't pay for them, well, it doesn't matter, because they were not useful to the economy. So I think that...
And that's sort of code word. Useful to the economy, yeah, means useful to the top elite parasites at the top of the economy.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever there is trouble, there's disease is very good for business, war is very good for business, and I'm guessing that we're going to see climate change exploited for corporate ends in the very near future, much nearer than any of us probably imagine.
Well, definitely so. I mean, we're going to get a Northwest Passage, and people are already fighting over it in the Arctic.
Yeah.
Because of the melting. We are out of time, and 2005 marches on just for another however many hours, and I just want to remind you before you go that you still have a few hours left to make a tax-deductible contribution to KBOO Radio, and no one here is expecting me to say that, so I'll make this offer. You call in with a pledge to KBOO of any amount, and just get them to take down your name and your number, and I'll get back with you and fill out a pledge form with you. How about that? I mean, you've got a few minutes, you know what I mean? You got that tax advantage coming up. You've got $50 at least, if you haven't already made it, that you can totally get back from the government for any tax-deductible contribution of that nature. So call us up. The number to call, 503-231-8032, and give us some money, okay?
That's what you need to do. Take responsibility, and let's work for change.
Thanks,
everybody.
Chris.
Thanks
stay
so
tuned.
Much for inviting me, Teresa.
Thanks. Stay tuned for more of the Incomparable Radio Zine.
KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.